Hawken also leads off our program today. She'll be talking with Alyssa Pariah and Nikki Elizabeth Milano about International Women Day this coming Thursday, March 18th. Alyssa Pariah is an Afro-Puerto Rican trans woman from New York City and an organizer with Don't Shoot Portland, an activist in the movement for Black Lives. Nikki Elizabeth Milano is a socialist feminist community organizer and educator currently based here in Portland. Among other things, they'll be talking about the intent of the women's strike being called for that day.
Good morning. This is Jan Hawken here today with Alyssa Pariah and Nikki Milano to talk about the women's march and strike coming up this Thursday in Portland. And indeed, it's a global event. This is the International Women's Day celebration that's been around for over a century now, and the second year of a call for recognizing the undervalued and underrecognized work of women through a strike. So welcome to KABU, Nikki Milano and Alyssa Pariah. Well, you're both activists, organizer, and come out of many social justice movement projects and campaigns, and I think bring a lot to the interesting and vital work of feminism these days. So let's start with talking about what's happening this Thursday. Nikki, can you just lay out a little bit of what will be happening this Thursday, and then at the end of our time, we'll give people more details about how they can find out about the march and strike.
Right. So the International Women's Strike is essentially a network of women that emerged out of organizing a strike last year, 2017, for International Working Women's Day. And this year is their second call to action. So there are women in over 50 different countries who are involved in varying different capacities to this. Different countries have different calls for different actions. And so in the U.S. here, the call is currently for a one-hour strike from 4 to 5 p.m. This was decided by the organizers based on the current kind of level of class consciousness and just level of struggle that we're at here in the U.S.
In terms of whether a strike and a work stoppage at a significant level can be pulled off.
Right, because, you know, we're currently still in this era where we're still, as the left, recovering from these attacks from Reagan, you know, these anti-labor attacks that we've seen, these anti-left attacks that we've seen for generations now. And the strike as a tool of the working class is not as generalized in our struggles here as it was before. So that's why the call is for 1 hour currently. But that isn't to underscore the importance of this at all, because, you know, what we're really trying to do here is highlight the fact that all kinds of women's labor, whether it is the labor that happens in the workplace, the labor that happens in home, the labor that happens in all of these different spaces, you know, much of it that is unpaid, whether it's in the workplace and you are being asked to smile more than your male co-workers, you're being asked to endure sexual harassment with a smile on your face, right? That's already extra labor. Then you go home, you have to take care of kids, you have to take care of family, right? So we acknowledge that there are all kinds of different forms of labor that women are engaged in. And we understand coming together and refusing to engage in that labor together and resisting that labor being forced on us. So for Portland, we're specifically organizing a solidarity action. We're going to have a rally during the strike time from 4 to 5 p.m. in which we have lots of different awesome women, amazing organizers who are going to be speaking there. And then we'll be having a march followed up by a speak out, just an opportunity for people to share their own experiences and rally together.
And you both identify as trans, and that's an important time in history for the trans movement. There's always been a challenging of the concept of woman in feminism and what it means to be a woman, what it means to use that term. Alyssa, could you speak a bit to trans politics and the inclusiveness of the idea of a women's march?
Yeah, a bit. I should acknowledge that I know that there are people that do not want trans women to be in feminism, that don't regard trans women to be women at all. And to you, I would just say, I'm sorry, because you are losing this battle. There are more and more women, particularly feminists, people that are involved in social justice work that uplift and affirm trans women and trans people across the board. I did not see anywhere that this is called a cis women's strike, right? It's a women's strike. And I don't think that by me being in the leadership of making the solidarity action happen in Portland or me asserting my space does anything to undercut any of the work that's being done and has been done by cis women. And if that's something that is perceived, I just don't know what else to tell you except that I will continue to struggle, and good luck to you if that's not something that you want.
It's interesting to try to separate issues that we've come to terms with as a movement in the left or feminism, and we can agree enough to move on, and people can grumble about it on the margins, yeah. But we've come to certain ideas of what it means to be progressive versus issues that are still important to keep in our debates. And this idea of feminism for the 99% mm-hmm. is, I think, an example of trying to extend feminism as a mass movement, a very, very large tent. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the importance of recognizing different feminist traditions and to debate those traditions.
Yeah, sure.
So maybe we could talk a little bit about how each of you sees feminism mm-hmm. and what are important issues to still debate mm-hmm. among the, you know, that tagline, feminism for the 99%. Nikki, do you want to respond first?
Sure. So in terms of feminism for the 99%, you know, I know that this is obviously borrowing from the language of Occupy Wall Street, right? And I think that it's important to remember that this isn't to say that feminism should be a homogenous entity, right? That feminism has to be this one thing that is applicable to all of the lives of those people, right? Because that's just not possible. There's all sorts of differences, as you were saying earlier, that we need to account for. But it is saying that based on our material interests and recognizing that there is this increasingly small elite holding the vast majority of the wealth in this society, that regardless of these differences, which we absolutely have to confront, which we absolutely are part of our struggles as well, that we do have this shared material interest to fight to make sure that the wealth in this society is equitably distributed, right?
It's not just a matter of putting women as CEOs or on corporate boards.
Absolutely. It's not just a matter of having Hillary Clinton-type figures getting elected in whatever kind of political office. It's actually like we have to think like in terms of working class women, in terms of the women who are working all these different jobs, who are making all these low wages, like, how do we uplift them, right? How do we build a movement that's actually going to address the issues that are relevant to these women, right? And these are issues that range from police violence, right, to issues of being pushed into certain industries, to issues of access to property, to issues of domestic violence, and the ways that all these kinds of things come together. So I think when we're talking about a feminism for the 99%, what we're hoping to do is kind of bridge this gap. You know, I think a lot of times we feel like we have to focus on class or we have to focus on gender, right? Specifically, or race or whatever. And it's important to be bridging these gaps and to be recognizing the way that gender oppression and class exploitation and oppression, these things are co-constitutive of each other. They've always historically existed together. And if we're going to be fighting them, while we, of course, want to talk about all their differences and recognize their differences and the way they play out in our lives differently, we have to ultimately fight them together on a united front, despite whatever theoretical differences we might have.
And there are some grounds where feminists of liberal and more left or radical traditions can mm-hmm. agree, but also areas of debate. It seems that one difference is around the Me Too movement, how much we focus on having powerful men brought down, which we would all agree is a good thing, mm-hmm. or having someone fired for sexual harassment versus mm-hmm. this kind of broad-based mobilization
yeah.
and call for structural change that both of you are calling about.
Just last night on the Oscars, I just wanted to lift that up, that they were shining a light on sexual harassment and misconduct and abuse. And I lift that up. I don't want to counterpose the International Women's Strike with the work that other women are doing that have different levels of consciousness, that have a different political orientation. I myself am simply less focused on what we may call glass ceiling, where we want to make it so that some women are able to achieve high heights. I come from a poor background. I'm a Black Puerto Rican trans woman raised in poverty. And I grew up looking at people who did not have the means to make a decent living for themselves, that could not make a life, that were barely surviving. So this is what I'm born and bred in, and I'm much more interested in raising the floor. So I don't want to counterpose those things and say one has to be privileged over the other. I'm making it very clear. This is what I'm doing. I really could care less about the ceiling at this point, if we're going with this metaphor, which is what we might call executive feminism.
And the floor has dropped pretty low.
It has dropped extremely low. People are falling and dying all the time, and it's not okay. It's painful and embarrassing. When we go out and protest, Don't Shoot Portland, I know you're going to bring up Don't Shoot Portland and the movement for Black Lives, of which I'm a part, but I know a lot of people think that when we hit the streets and when we get out there and we scream, we're having fun or we're taking some kind of joy in what we're doing. No, it's humiliating that we're fighting for basic human rights and dignity. I don't want to do it. It pains me. But this is what I'm called to do. And I hope that other people feel called to do it too. Come out for International Women's Day.
I think sometimes, and for good reasons and maybe limiting ones, women's marches and feminism have been described as an example of peaceful protests. Though a women's march in 2017 was widely praised because there was hardly an incident. That's something to be proud of, but women also need to be able to make a ruckus. And I think around police politics, often these can be quite confrontational.
Yes.
Alyssa, would you say something about feminism and police politics?
Yes.
And as an activist in the movement for Black Lives and Don't Shoot Portland, what do you bring to the Women's March?
Thank you. So I know that, just like we mentioned, not all feminism is working class feminism. Not all feminism is what we would call intersectional feminism either. So certainly there are women who would call themselves feminists who think that the police are just fine and dandy and that don't pay much attention to or care very much about racial dynamics and racial oppression. And to those feminists, I say good luck to you. Good luck with that struggle. That's not where I'm orienting towards. The movement for Black Lives, particularly Don't Shoot Portland, is what moved me into struggle and helped me to see my own capacity to change the world around me. Just to motion back to my childhood, I grew up watching people that I loved, women that I loved, be brutalized by the police and have to go to jail, didn't have money to post bail, experienced sexual violence at the hands of the police. And this was something that we knew was a regular part of life when you're Black and brown and poor. This is what you experience. So when the movement for Black Lives, the Black Lives Matter movement, began to really move and catch fire, it was incredible because I looked and I thought, wow, we can really stop the police from beating, killing, humiliating, raping, abusing people, and they won't be able to get away with it for much longer. And we're still on that road. There have been quite a few setbacks. We know that. You don't have to look much further than the police contract that was signed by our mayor.
Can you say a bit about that? Topic for another show, but yeah. I mean, what can you just briefly say what was problematic about that?
Ted Wheeler promised or motioned toward a police reform of reeling them in. And as far as we can see, he's only unleashed them more and certainly hasn't done anything in the way of cutting back how much funding they're getting. While people are homeless, freezing and dying on the street and in parks. I'm talking about Village of Hope, right? Self-managed homeless camps that, frankly, Ted Wheeler should be praising God that they're doing that and taking care of themselves, because that's something that he doesn't have to do. They won't be flooding the streets and hurting the city's beautiful liberal veneer, where people who are coming through don't have to see people on the street living in destitute. Well, there are people who have self-managed camps all over, and the Village of Hope in particular is out of people's eyesight. I would think that he would be very happy to have them there. But instead, him and Amanda Fritz sent rangers to go and destroy their camp, everything that they built. They had showers, toilets, cleaning facilities, people to make sure that the place is secure.
And there's something to be learned from self-organizing,
yes,
among the houseless population. And we can learn many things,
yeah,
from people who find ways of surviving under impossibly difficult
conditions. It's incredible.
Condition.
They couldn't even get a meeting with Amanda Fritz until we did a sit-in in her office. They had been trying for months, and she wouldn't speak to them. These are people who are, it's snowing, it's freezing outside, and people die from it. And no, I won't see you. It's horrendous. So, yeah.
And this is also a feminist issue. Just in closing, Nikki, say a little bit about how to learn more about Thursday, be part of it, and what's going to happen.
Absolutely. So you can go to Women's Strike US, the website. That is where you can find information about the movement at large. You can also look up our event, International Women's Strike, on Facebook, RSVP, you know, come out on Thursday. We're going to start.
There's a page for Portland specifically?
Yes.
There's Don't Shoot Portland.
Yeah. It's organized by Don't Shoot Portland. Yes. Yeah, just show up. If you can be there for the rally and the strike time, do it. I would also like to ask men to step up, take over the household labor, and take over the labor at the job place, whatever you can do to support your women in striking.
That's a way men can show solidarity.
Absolutely. Women, you know, come out. Let's all fight together. Let's stand together. And yeah, let's march together and speak out and fight together for a world free of gendered violence, free of capitalist exploitation.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much for being here today, Alyssa Pariah and Nikki Milano. And we'll join you on Thursday at the Women's March and Strike.
4 o'clock, Pioneer Courthouse Square.
Yeah, keep up the good work. Okay.
Thank you.